if we get any weather at all in the coming week, most of us will head for a beach. An increasing number of beaches around the coast now have lifeguards, and their way of working has changed due to COVID. Lorna Siggins has met some lifeguards in County Clare.
A few weeks ago, in the middle of the lockdown, Water Safety Ireland Chief Executive John Leach warned that lifeguards could have one of their busiest seasons in years due to the number of people on water, both on the coast and on inland waterways. I'm down in Spanish Point in County Clare, overlooking the Atlantic, on the lovely Blue Flag Beach, where there's about half a dozen people out on surfboards, kids in wetsuits, lots of sandcastles being built. And I'm about to speak to Rachel O'Brien, one of the lifeguards here. And she's already had quite a busy morning.
It hasn't been too bad now. It's a bit windy. It started out nice and sunny, but it's been grand. We had two rescues there earlier today. It has been a bit busier than probably we'd have been expecting, considering it's been the COVID-19. But I suppose people just want to get out of the house nowadays and stuff, so just any opportunity to exit the house at this point.
And did you have to do some extra training then for this season?
During our induction, what we did was we were trained to use the BWM, which is the bag valve mask. And basically that prevents us from having to do mouth-to-mouth when we're doing resuscitation. It prevents us from basically having any contact with the casualty. So we have different forms of rescue equipment. So we have rescue tubes, can buoys, and we also have the rescue board. So, and when it comes to the rescue tube and the can buoy, the rope is actually 2 meters long. So it actually stops us from having any form of contact with the casualty at all. And when it comes to the board is actually 14 foot long, which I think is about just over 3 meters in length. So the person we are, the casualty, would basically lie out flat facing the tip of the board. Then we'd lie out behind them, facing the tip of the board, so there'd be no face-to-face contact at all, so there'd be no worries about that at all. No, do you know what? It works very well now, so we've just been trained so much now at this point that it's just all works nice and handy.
And how long have you been lifeguarding?
So this is my fourth year now. Yeah, so quite experienced anyway in the whole job, but we're always learning something new every year.
So when you heard about the pandemic back in March, like, did you sort of think, oh God, this is going to be a really, really difficult summer now?
I wasn't even sure if the lifeguarding was going to go ahead because of it, but because of lockdown and everything. But everything seems to be kind of normalising again now, but we're keeping our distance from each other as the lifeguards. During our induction, we were actually told to keep our 2 metres apart at all times, make sure we were constantly using hand sanitizer whenever we exited and entered the lifeguard station. Actually, do you know what? I only had my first rescue today. I've worked in very safe beaches in the past. So today there was just two children. They were out, just kind of got dragged out a bit. We started to notice that the head started to bop up and down. I ran out, got the board, and got the two of them towed onto the board and brought them back in. They didn't panic at all. They grabbed onto the board, did everything I asked, and it went very, very smoothly. Some people have a little bit of a problem with staying in between the red and yellow flags because of coronavirus. So I think that they're just worried about the crowding and stuff, but all I can do is advise them just to stay within the red and yellow flags because it's the safest place to be.
Rachel's boss is Claire McGrath, who's Water Safety Development Officer for County Clare, and she told me about some of the challenges involved in this season.
My children have been lifeguards over the years, so I've been reared with lifesaving throughout my entire life, and I'm very involved in water safety all the time. So it's great to be doing a job that I would have a lot of background in. I would be line manager for 48 lifeguards in County Clare. We have 12 designated lifeguarded areas in County Clare. 9 of them are blue flag beaches, and 3 of these are green coast beaches. And they would be now, from the 1st of July, would be lifeguarding 7 days from 11 a.m. every day till 7 p.m. in the evening, 7 days per week, Monday to Sunday. So, yeah, 12 designated areas. Some of them are busier, would have a lot more than they've had 4, 5, 6 lifeguards on duty, depending on the days off, etc. And then some of them would only have 2 or 3 lifeguards on duty, depending on the size of the beach and what would have been recommended within the risk assessment. All these areas have to be risk assessed by Water Safety Ireland, which tells me how many people need to be there to cover the lifeguarding correctly. It's very busy, and especially since the travel limit this year with the COVID-19 restrictions, once the travel within the county was changed, then it got busier. And now with the countrywide travel, then obviously it's an awful lot busier. People have decided to staycation. Clare County Council were, from the very get-go, were very supportive and believed that the beaches, our beaches, should be lifeguarded because of the popularity of them, and because there's always people there, be it for surfing or swimming, or on the fine days, obviously, for the beach goers to sit around and enjoy the sunshine. We started quite early once the whole COVID started. It was just the challenge to start getting this ready so that we would be able to prepare and be organised in plenty of time and to get those procedures correctly in place. Along the West Coast anyway, all the lifeguards are working to the same standards with the COVID restrictions and everything in place. The lifeguard stations are all marked with the 2 metres where their observation stations would be, 2 metres apart. We did retraining on the resuscitation. Irish Water Safety did new guidelines on how lifeguards should perform resuscitation. And then, of course, the same stuff you see in every shop and every, the hand sanitizers and the hand washing and the paper towels and all those masks had to be prepared and purchased and organized in time. It's busy. It's back to normal people visiting anyway at this stage. There are some beaches busier than others. The lifeguards are trained, and that was part of their upskilling. They were always trained to prevent an accident happening before it happens, obviously, is the main lesson they learn. But after that, they were always taught to keep their distance, to use their, what we call a rescue tube or a can buoy, where they would pass a buoyant object to somebody who's in difficulty. In any case, before there was ever COVID worries, the lifeguards would be safer to be 2 metres back from any struggling casualty. They would also have a rescue board where they could put a casualty, but the casualty is face down, face forward, away, breathing forward away from them. And the right lifeguard is at the back, and that board is 14 feet long. So there's plenty of space between them to be able to have a casualty up the front of the board and for them to be at the back and help them in. The people that get into difficulty would be very often where they're not swimming in a safe area. The lifeguards will put up the 2 red and yellow flags, and that would be where the safest place to swim for the public. It's the people who step away from that. We have found in Clare that people will go to the, I'll go to the far end of the beach, there's nobody there to do my social distancing, but it happens to be a dangerous spot that they don't think that's why there isn't a crowd down there, because it's a dangerous place. So there's been a lot more patrol and beach patrols reminding people not to swim in those quiet places further down the beach and to move back. If they do want to go for a swim, go for a swim in the safe area where the beach has been flagged with red and yellow flags. Okay, go sit in the beach with your family in the quieter spot. That's not going to be any harm.
A few days before my visit to Spanish Point, a lifeguard on another West Coast beach had to receive hospital treatment, having had to rescue somebody from the water who had ignored the red flag. Water Safety Ireland provides training and support for lifeguards, as its Deputy Chief Executive Roger Sweeney explains.
The scenario you've just outlined is a typical scenario where somebody overestimates their own ability. And also, by the way, alcohol is a factor in about a third of all drownings. And alcohol can lull people into this sense of confidence as well. So if you combine the fact that they overestimate their ability, they underestimate the risks of cooler water at the moment, hidden currents, and the conditions that make a lifeguard decide to put up a red flag. If they ignore these, they do put themselves at risk, and they do put lifeguards' lives at risk as well. Culturally, we've had arguably an unhealthy fear of water in this country, and we need to turn that into a healthy respect for all these lovely aquatic environments that we have around the country. Water shouldn't intimidate people. We should really be inspired by what we have. If you're visiting beaches, rivers or lakes, it's important that you stick to government guidelines in terms of social distancing. And remember, it's not the lifeguard's job to instill that sense of responsibility. We've had 1,200 drownings in the last 10 years. So drowning is a significant public health issue. So we're asking people really socially distance. Don't swim in areas that are known to be unsafe. Swim only in areas that are designated as being traditionally safe. And every year, the lifeguards that we train, they find about 300 or so children that are unaccompanied or lost beside the water, and these children have to be reunited with parents. So, you know, we're asking people to please supervise the kids in your care. 30 children aged 14 and under drown in this country in 10 years. That's a classroom of children. So now that the lifeguards are on full time, I think people should really go onto our website and watersafety.ie and find a lifeguard of Waterway that's close by to them, you know, because the lifeguards are on duty and they're there for you. Let your family be safe by swimming at lifeguarded waterways, and they're all listed on our website, watersafety.ie.
And that was Lorna Siggins with the lifeguards at Spanish Point. There's a fascinating archive project ongoing in RTE at the moment to digitise some of the oldest sound recordings we have. These are held on 78 records, and many of them are of real interest for us here on Seascapes. The recordings were made on a mobile recording unit, which was hooked up in the field to the car battery, and then recorded voices by cutting a new record there and then. In the field, the journalists could record about 4 minutes on an acetate. And unlike what we do now, he, and it was invariably a man, couldn't go back to edit it later. You had to get it right the first time. I have a couple of short pieces this evening, going back as far as the 1940s. This first clip dates from 20th of June 1949, and it's John Gallagher, the boatman who supplied the lighthouse on Eagle Island over the northwest coast of Mayo.
Well, John, how did you enjoy your trip today?
Oh, because I enjoyed it splendid today. If we got every day like it, we were all right.
Yes, I believe you get it rough enough sometimes.
Oh, that is very rough.
But tell me, John, do you own the boat, you do?
I do.
You have a contract with Irish Lights to run?
Yes, yes.
But how often do you go out?
Well, every 14 days.
Every 14 days.
And then the first chance. Oh, good evening.
Grand evening. But every 14 days, if the weather is good?
Yes, if the weather is good. And then, as I told you before, the next chance, the first chance we get to in afterwards.
Yes. Well, I suppose sometimes you'd be kept 3 weeks in a month.
Oh, yes, man, in the winter time and longer, often.
You would.
And you have to be watching on the lookout for it then and bringing stuff from Balmullet and returning it again too.
Yes. Well, do you bring a big load out?
Well, it doesn't be so big indeed.
What do you carry? Just provisions?
Provisions of all sorts. Meat and everything.
And the mail,
I don't carry the mail. Of course, the postman carries the mail.
Yes.
Yes.
I see. Well, John, how long is how long are you at it? It's in your family, I believe, is it?
It's in our family. My great-grandfather had it.
Is that so?
That's so.
Well, that's a big record.
Well, it seems that they didn't find any fault with it, that's all. That's all I say now.
Yes, indeed.
That was John Gallagher, the boatman supplying Eagle Island Lighthouse. On the lighthouse itself, Frank Sweeney was the lighthouse keeper, and here he is also from that date, 20th of June 1949, more than 70 years ago.
I see a boat here, Frank, the Rose of Scotchport.
Oh, this is the boat for the relief to Eagle Island.
That's an old boat. That's not the one they're using now, is
it?
Oh,
no, this is an old boat, just to stand by in case the other one is broken up, which relief days.
Well, this is Scotchport Bay here.
Oh, yes, this is the Scotchport. In fact, it's very bad here, Scotchport Harbours. From the keeper's point of view, it's very bad. We have often a good landing outside at Eagle Island when Scotchport is very bad and the relief boat can't get out.
So you mean the bay gets rough here?
Oh, yes, it's all broken water.
Yes, you can see the wide Atlantic straight out from it.
Yes.
Well, tell me, is it considered a bad part of the coast for ocean-going vessels?
It's one of the worst on the Irish coast, this part of the coast here.
Yes, that's why you have your lighthouse out here, I suppose.
Oh, yes, that's one of the reasons, really.
Well, tell me, what's it like on Eagle Island when the sea gets up?
In the winter time, it's very bad. I've been out there this winter now, and we've had the sea coming over the lighthouse and all over the island.
Right over the lighthouse?
Right over the...
And what's the height, is it? What's the height of the lighthouse?
The height of the lighthouse, about 250 feet high, I think it is.
Some seas.
Oh, desperate seas.
Well, how do you like being out there in bad weather?
Oh, I don't mind it. I'm quite used to it. I've been on a very bad one before I came here, the Fastened Rock.
Certainly a bad one.
Oh,
well, you get plenty
bad
to do in bad weather.
Yes, especially in foggy weather, we get a lot to do, in hazy weather and misty weather.
Yes, what was it like out there last weekend when that haze and fog was on here?
Well, we had a lot of fog last weekend out there. I think we were 3 days going without a stop.
3 days going. We heard it here a lot.
Yes.
We had a very fine echo in here on the land too.
Yes, we had 3 blasts every minute.
3 blasts every minute. At what intervals?
2 seconds. 2 seconds blasts.
Yes. Well, you've a very fine day coming in today, and I hope you'll enjoy a fortnight you'll spend here.
Fortnight ashore and 6 weeks on the rock, weather permitting, of course.
Yes. What's the longest spell you ever were on?
I was on 9 weeks last winter.
Some spell indeed. Well, I hope you have a pleasant crossing back again,
Frank.
Thank you very much.
Lighthouse keeper Frank Sweeney speaking there in 1949. And he is just one of a long line of the Sweeney family who are keepers on Eagle Island. For this next clip, we go to the Tusker Rock in 1953. This is a clip with the radio presenter Norris Davidson from a programme which is called Surprise Packet. Here, he's speaking from the shore to the keeper of the lighthouse at Tusker Rock, Mr. Henry Duggan.
Hello, Tusker Rock, Tusker Rock, Tusker Shore. Mr. Duggan, we're all set now, so I'll hand it over to Mr. Davidson.
Hello, Mr. Duggan. Hello, Mr. Duggan. I'm very glad to meet you this way, and I hope we'll meet ashore sometime. Now, this programme is about people who work at night, and I wonder if you'd be good enough to tell us from your rock out there, down on the southeastern corner of the country, to tell us about the night routine in the lighthouse and about all the other things you have in the lighthouse, the beacons and any other mechanical stuff, engines, and also something about your bird watching, which you do a great deal of, I believe. So if you'll begin with that now, begin on life in the lighthouse during the night. Over to you.
Hello, 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 Tusker Shore, Tusker Shore. Good afternoon, Mr. Davidson. I got all your marks, and you say the programme is about people who work by night. I think you can safely include us in that category. Of the many people to whom the setting sun is a reminder to prepare for their nightly tasks, the lightship and lighthouse men could, I think, claim to be the first off, as it's exactly at sunset, just as old man Sol gives us his parting smile before covering his head up. We salute him with a wink or two. Our night's work has started. Our lights are shining. Of course, if the evening is a dark and gloomy one, we must light up much sooner. Here on the Tusker Rock off the southeast coast of Wexford, we commence the nightly round by starting up a 14 horsepower diesel engine. Most of the other lights work on the older incandescent system of lighting, and they have a different routine of preparations. Here our light is an electric one. The engine turns a dynamo to generate the current, which lights the 3-kilowatt lamp in the lantern on top of the tower, 108 feet above high water level. This lamp is surrounded by the usual arrangement of revolving lens and prisms, which gather the light and magnify it, and sends it out in concentrated beams of light of 1 million candle power. We show two flashes in quick succession every 7.5 seconds, which can be seen by the ships up to a distance of 20 miles away. The purpose of these flashes is, as you know, to guide the ships on their way, and also to warn them off from the many dangerous reefs and rocks about. Well, during the night, from sunset to sunrise, each keeper minds the light in his turn, keeping watch for 4 hours. And there are 3 keepers on at a time, so it works out as 4 on and 8 off. Whilst on watch, the keeper attends to the engine.
And that was the lighthouse keeper on the Tusker Rock back in 1953. And I'd like to thank our archivist here in RTE Radio, Rob Canning, for sourcing those recordings for me. We have lighthouses all around the coast, as we know, but another curious building that you'll see in some parts of the coast are Martello Towers. Why were they built? What did they do? A regular contributor, Hugh Orme, can tell us.
The strangest buildings around the coastline of Ireland are the old Martello Towers, built around 200 years ago to protect Ireland from the threat of a French invasion. That invasion, of course, never happened, but that didn't stop a whole network of these towers being built. All around the Irish coastline, some 50 of them are still in place, with most of them, about 30 in all, in the greater Dublin area. The story of these towers goes right back to the 16th century. They were inspired by the towers that people in Corsica had built to protect both their coastal villages and their shipping from North African pirates. These round towers in Corsica were built either as one or two-story edifices up to 15 metres in diameter. They had a single doorway about 5 metres above ground level that could only be accessed with a ladder which the occupants of the tower could pull up. And when locals spotted the unexpected approach of ships, they lit a beacon on the roof of the tower. Then in 1794, when the Royal Navy was besieging Corsica, two of their warships unsuccessfully attacked one of these round towers on the island. It took 2 days of sustained attack by land-based forces for the tower to fall under British control, and the durability of the tower inspired the British to start building a whole network of them right across these islands, Ireland and Britain. At the start of the 19th century, when Britain and Napoleonic France were at war, many of these round towers were built at strategic coastal locations on these islands. And the threat of a French invasion of Ireland was considered so severe, the construction of Martello Towers here was begun in 1804. In total, around 45 towers were built on the Irish coastline, with 26 of them constructed between Balbriggan and Bray on the east coast, as Dublin was considered especially vulnerable to a French attack. All the towers in the Dublin area were built so that they were all in line of sight from one tower to the next. Others were built in Clare, Cork, Galway, Wicklow and Wexford. One or two of them were built in inland locations, such as Meelick, County Offaly, to guard the Shannon crossing there. A few towers were built along the west coast, including a square rather than a round tower that was built on Achill in County Mayo. And hardly surprisingly, it soon became known locally as the French Tower. Today, some of the towers are in very poor condition, such as the one at Donabate in North County Dublin and the one at Balbriggan in the same part of the country. The latter tower is in a very poor state and is considered the one most at risk in the Dublin area. On the other hand, the tower at Portrand, also just north of Dublin, is considered to be in good habitable condition. The towers have had many different owners and uses in the 2 centuries since they were built. One famous owner was Bono, who in the 1980s owned the Martello Tower at Bray in County Wicklow. Many of the remaining towers in Ireland are owned by local councils, while in some cases they are privately owned, like the one on Ireland's Eye. Last year, the Tetrarch Investment Group bought the Howth Estate, and this acquisition included the tower on Ireland's Eye. And of all the towers around the Irish coast, perhaps the most famous is the one at Sandy Cove in South County Dublin. Well over a century ago, James Joyce lived in this tower for a few days with a friend of his, Oliver St. John Gogarty. In his famed book Ulysses, Joyce included the tower inhabited by 2 fictional characters, Stephen Dedalus and Malachy Buck Mulligan. And today, this tower houses a museum dedicated to James Joyce. Truly, Ireland's Martello Towers are an amazing collection of buildings, none of which was ever used for their original defensive purpose, but most were so strongly built that they have survived in generally very good condition right up to the present day, a truly remarkable addition to the Irish coastline.
Hugh Oram.